the bleak midwinter. Not the cheeriest of Christmas carols, but a meaningful one, a deep one. Dan Fogelberg with the song for us. 9.5 minutes after the hour on a Tuesday morning, and what else could that mean but a visit from Dr. Don Clark, vice chairman of the board of Creation Moments. And I wouldn't want to saddle you with more responsibility than you're willing to take on there, Don.
And, yes, I've got enough responsibility as it is.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Don is a biochemist. He's deeply committed to giving the wine industry in Texas a big boost by researching and growing and fermenting and creating his own wines. And we have fun talking with Don about that. But mainly we talk about things like science and creation and faith and hypotheses and theories and laws and the difference between them. And in fact, we just talked about that last week. Why don't you explain to us once again, Don, that procedure? Now, this is kind of like textbook science. This is how they teach it in high school. What is a hypothesis?
Well, a hypothesis is nothing other than a guess. I mean, you have let's say you've got some observable facts, and you're trying to explain what you observed, excuse me, either through a, some type of mathematical model. And so you come up with a mathematical model and you say, well, I think if I perturb the conditions or change the conditions a little bit, then my result should be this. And so based on your mathematical model, you predict that, let's say, if you increase the pressure on your system, then water is not going to freeze. It's going to remain liquid, if that's what you're trying to observe. So you do the experiment, and sure thing, your ice is not freezing at the temperature that it's supposed to freeze at. And so you expand that a little bit more and a little bit more, and eventually that hypothesis is proven to be correct under various conditions and observable experiments, and other laboratories do the same thing, and they said, yep, we got the same results. It looks like your mathematical model or description of this particular phenomenon is actually correct, so it gets elevated to a theory. And that goes on for a while, and more people use your equation and test other things, and that turns out to be right. And eventually, the theory, for example, is no longer a theory, then it's called a law. And we've got such things as the law of gravity, for example, when Newton said, well, I throw a ball up and it comes back down, and I can predict the velocity at which the ball comes down. I can measure something called the acceleration of gravity, and I'll put together an equation. And he did that. And many, many people, have tested it. And, of course, depending on whether you're dropping a feather or whether you're dropping a ball at various weights, it doesn't matter. The acceleration due to gravity is going to remain the same on both of those objects, assuming that you don't have a counterforce, in this case, which would be wind or air or something. Yeah. So you take all of that into consideration, and lo and behold, Newton's equations for gravity turned out to be correct.
Now, he was one of the founders of the scientific age, and 17th century, 1600s, when Newton studied and wrote and did his experiments.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and how long
just,
do you...
one point of thing, he was a Christian. And, yeah. So, science actually started from the premise that we have, that our universe is a ordered universe and not a chaotic universe, and therefore can be studied, and we can come up with rational explanations for what we see.
Now Darwin did his voyages and his research and his observations and his studies, wrote his book back, 1850s, thereabout, 1840s, right. 1850s. And here we are now, we're 160 years later, and we're talking about the theory of evolution, and we're talking about the Big Bang theory. Now, I'm not sure when Big Bang thought began. I don't know when that was first written about, but I think it was the 20th century, wasn't it? Well, with the dawn of the nuclear age?
It was. And Hubble, for example, who was a cosmologist, astronomist, he came up with a observation that he thought it was an observation. He thought it was a theory that the farther a astronomical body is from Earth, the faster it's moving. Mm-hmm. And so, he came up with a graph of we think this astronomical body, this galaxy or this galaxy cluster is X billion light years away, mm-hmm. and so therefore it's got to be this big, and it gives this much light, and so forth and so on.
So he was kind of the founder of that. But then Einstein must have contributed with notions of the redshift and the way you gauge a velocity and distance. So what I'm getting at here is I'm wondering if with this acceleration of scientific study, now we've got many more scientists than they had 400 years ago with much greater tools, and much faster ways of sharing knowledge. Does a hypothesis gravitate to theory and gravitate to law faster now than it would have in Newton's time?
Well, it could, because you've got more people verifying or not verifying your results, I suppose. But in actual fact, there's very, very few laws. Mm-hmm. you've got some laws of physics, and then of course, when quantum physics came into being, it was like, wow, this is so strange. This is nothing we have observed before, but that's on the sub-micro of the micro. It's subatomic levels, and a lot of different strange things happen. So I think the basic principles like gravity or like other types of laws. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're getting a whole lot of new laws being
laws of momentum and some other things that really the only ones I can think of are things Newton developed, really, or that were spun off of Newton's basic theories and laws. And I guess what I'm getting at are we refer to the theory of evolution. We refer to the Big Bang theory. Are we jumping the gun?
Very much so. Because it can't be proven. Mm-hmm. one way or the other. Now you can find evidence that says, I think the universe has started from nothing, and out of this nothing there was a Big Bang. We don't know how the Big Bang happened, but there was a whole bunch of energy in a singularity or a point that is absolutely nothing, and Out of that, somehow the atomic particles started to coalesce. Why? Well, we don't know.
Well, science has never explained why very well. They've explained how, but not why. That's my opinion.
Right, so out of those subatomic particles, of course, then we get the basic atoms being formed, and then out of those basic atoms, somehow those get together with each other and start a nuclear reaction, which we call the stars or suns. Mm-hmm. And somehow, at some point in time, these stars or suns, get too big, or their mass is out of balance for a bit, and they're no longer in equilibrium, and then they explode. And out of the explosion comes higher elements. And it's those higher elements, and then this process continues. This death and rebirth of new stars is supposed to have continued for billions of years. Matter of fact, they think they think the universe is 18 and a half or 18.6 billion years old. And the way that they measure that is because that's the farthest out we can see. And so we're basing our age of the universe based on the distance of the farthest galaxy clusters that we can see now with the Hubble telescope. But so you can, in one sense, people are just imagining this, that this is the process by which the universe was formed. And unfortunately, we've got some recent results within the scientific literature. New cosmology, for example, it's not new cosmology, it's just new observations of events or things in the cosmos that is saying, hey, wait a minute, maybe it didn't happen like this at all. And you know, maybe there are cosmologists now that are saying, hey, it looks like the stuff out there has been there forever. It doesn't look like it's been created, or it doesn't look like it came from a big bang. It looks like it's been there forever, and it looks like it's going to continue forever. Well, that kind of fits with the creation model in my mind, in that, you know, God created with his voice, obviously. He said, let there be light, and out of the light, he creates all of the atoms and this, you know, the subatomic particles and the atoms, and you know, then he said, let the dry land appear out of the you know, this ball of water, and lo and behold, you know, dry lands appear. So he spoke it into existence as if it was, had been there all along. And you know, Genesis then becomes not just, well, it's an interesting story, or it's an interesting, you know, we have to say it that way because man couldn't understand it any other way. But no, Genesis is indeed what it says it is. It's a history book. And it is the history of not only Earth, but of the universe. So what are some of these findings, these recent findings, for example, that, you know, the Big Bang may not be be correct? Well, one of them has to do, and we talked about this, it's some, I don't remember, you know, how long ago it was, but the pillars of creation, it's a region in the nebula, the Eagle Nebula, and it's, you know, it's called pillars because it looks like pillars out in space in this nebula.
It's a fantastic photograph, by the way, yeah.
And some, you know, a picture was taken back in 1995 with the Hubble telescope, and people jumped all over it and said, oh, you see, there's some new stars being formed out in this region in the pillars of creation. And that's why where the name came from, because they thought that new stars were being formed in this nebula. That, now a nebula, what's a nebula? It's an exploded star, basically. And so this exploded star, we should, according to the Big Bang theory, expect and anticipate then out of that, eventually, we should get new stars and new matter being formed. Well, they took the picture back in 1995, and 20 years later, this year, they said, "Well, let's go take a look. Just let's go take another look at this region and take another picture of the pillars of creation." Now they did that, and they found no new stars. They found absolutely the same thing, that there was nothing being formed. There were no new stars being formed, and a matter of fact, out of all of cosmology and all of the places that we've looked around the universe, we have never seen a new star form. Now, we've seen, you know, stars die, and we've seen, you know, nebulas being formed, and the Crab Nebula, for example. We weren't there, of course. We aren't old enough, but you know, back in our history, we have information or data, for example, that the peoples on Earth at the time saw this big bright thing in the sky, and you know, saw basically the star exploding, which then, you know, became the Crab Nebula as we see today. So we see plenty of stars dying, but we never and have never seen any stars being created. So the pillars of creation is just a nice name for a region within the Eagle Nebula, but it doesn't appear that any creation is taking place at all. Mm-hmm. So the new data is saying, hey, we got a problem here because there isn't anything that's happening in this particular region in space. So they'll have to continue their search, and they will be searching for a long, long time.
They will indeed. Space is a big place, if it isn't indeed a place. It reminds me of the factoid I heard not long ago, that if a ship sails out to sea, you can see it for about 3 miles, like 3.1 miles, before it disappears over the horizon. That's as far as you can see, looking out to the ocean, you know?
Right, okay.
And so if we transfer that notion to space, then we know that the Earth is more than 3 miles, that there's more Earth around the curve. Could the same thing be true in space? We can only see out so far, but who knows what's beyond that? We can't say that's the end, can we, just because we can't see it?
Well, that's exactly correct. Mm-hmm. So what we can say is that the furthest galaxy clusters that we see are, you know, that far out in space, 18.4 or 6 billion light years away.
And then we calculate the distance light would travel. I mean, the time it would take for light, knowing, again, we have assigned a value to the speed of light. So we put that in the equation and figure out how far away these things are. That sounds pretty iffy to me.
Well, it's iffy on a number of bases, because you're assuming that space is uniform, and we've talked about this before. Yeah. If space is not uniform, how do you know that light is traveling through space at the same relative speed, not the absolute?
And there's the key question: how do you know if you can't reproduce it experimentally? Although experimentally, I think they have demonstrated that the speed of light is actually not a constant. True?
Well, it's not on a relative basis. On an absolute basis, for example, if you go any place in space, now this is a thought experiment. You know, it's not something that we can do other than sending out spaceships to distant planets, which we've now done. And we actually have, you know, our observation satellite that we sent out many, many years ago that is now beginning to get outside of our solar system. Interestingly enough, the data from that satellite is sending back information faster than they thought it would, suggesting that either it's not as far out as they think it is, or that light and radio waves travel a lot faster in that part of space for some reason.
Interesting.
And so it sort of puts credence to the fact that, hey, maybe space isn't uniform. And Einstein kind of stumbled on this with his gravitational law, his laws of gravity, which are more refined, if you will, based on the his general relativity, would suggest that space is more clustered around heavier bodies than it is, you know, out in space. It's almost like you got space bubbles, and these little space bubbles kind of congregate around mass. So if you've got a big massive star, then you've got more space bubbles around it than if you just have kind of empty space. Anyway, that's another discussion for another time.
Well, yeah, which we look forward to that one.
Anyway, so if indeed space is not uniform, then you can't really say how far the these galaxy clusters are. And in matter of fact, you can't say how long it took for the light to travel, that distance. Anyway, but that's kind of getting off the subject here of the Big Bang and whether or not
it's intriguing. I'm wondering if in order to verify or test the Big Bang hypothesis, then if you can look at tiny things and see similar principles at work, similar basic laws of physics at work in tiny things, which brings to mind quantum physics. Is that useful in teaching us about the creation?
Well, you try to, the best that you can do is slam particles together, and we do that at, with accelerators, of course, and
super collider.
We can take charged particles like a proton, for example, and smash protons together and then observe what other particles come out from that, or what other energies come out from smashing these together. And so, particle physicists want bigger and bigger colliders so that they can smash these things, faster and faster in more energy together, and hopefully see, hey, what is this really made of? But that just gives you physical principles. That just says, based on the amount of energy I'm putting into the system, I should expect this particle or that particle. And you can then begin to build a model, for example, of how, atoms are put together, or how a proton is put together, or how an electron is put together, and what the electron is made of. And, it's made of three particles, and then you begin to build a model. But building that model, again, does not tell you anything about how it started in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
It just tells you, okay, I've got this car, and I'm taking this car apart, and I've got some bolts here, and I've got some screws, and I've got some metal, and I've got some plastic, and I've got, all these various parts, and this car is made of these parts. There's some wires, and everything is a part now.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't tell you how it got there in the first place, other than, hey, this is pretty intelligent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it tells you that there was an intelligent creator that put this car together in the first place, mm-hmm. designed it and made the parts and everything.
That it was purposefully made.
And it was purposefully made. Now why can't we do that with the atom? Or why can't we do that with something like a proton, and say, hey, this proton is made up of these various parts, and it looks like everything has to be perfect in order for the proton to exist. And we've got these subatomic particles that are spinning around each other, and it looks like it was designed that way. Mm-hmm. Why can't we say that, hey, look at the intelligent creator that designed it, instead of saying that, oh, this just happened by random chance? It just mm-hmm. doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we keep going along these paths looking for the randomness in nature, but you couldn't do science if it was random, because if it was random, you couldn't repeat the experiment, and if you couldn't repeat the experiment, you would never prove anything.
Interesting. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So it's...
Then I guess, is that where this thing called chaos theory comes in?
Well, chaos theory it says, you get something, we know that something's going to happen. We know that there's going to be, let's say, an earthquake. But we don't know exactly when the earthquake's going to form, or when it'll happen. And then all of a sudden it happens, and that was a chaos. It's some event, triggered the release of mm-hmm. the energy built up in the Earth's crust.
Unpredictably.
And then all of a sudden the plates start moving, past each other, and we call mm-hmm. it an earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, a chaos theory takes into, or tries to take into account, these unexplainable things that we don't really, we know what's going to occur, but we don't know when it's going to occur, and we're trying to explain that by saying, well, you know, there's some event that's going to happen that's going to trigger this, and there you have it. You
know? Well, here's something that's a little metaphysical. If something is random, can it be random by design? Or is, you know, it relates to coincidence. Is there such a thing as coincidence? Or does everything happen for a reason? The two are comparable, I think. Randomness and coincidence or happenstance. I mean, it means we can't, all it means is, all it says is we can't predict it. We don't know enough to predict it.
Well, that could be. Yeah. I mean, everything is, it takes into account a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's an open-ended question in a sense. But it is interesting that in Hebrew they have no such thing as the, you know, as a coincidence. Mm-hmm. And everything, you know, happens for a purpose. So we could, you know, say the same thing, at least in the spiritual realm, that everything happens for a purpose. Now, the Hebrews, Hebrew scholars, and Hebrew, you know, the priests and everything, they, you know, believe that indeed everything happens with a purpose. We may not be able to explain why it happens, but it does help to look at events, for example, described in the Bible, and say, hey, you know, wait a minute, if everything happens for a purpose, why is this, you know, why did God, for example, I'll just give you one event, one historic event, you know, from the Bible, where Joshua was told, okay, take your armies, set your priests up front with their trumpets, walk around the city we call Jericho, and this is going to be your first city that you're going to defeat and take this new land that I'm giving you and have given your ancestors. And now it's time for you to retake the land again. So they walk around this city. So they march around the city, of course, and we know that they march for 7 days. They march around the city. And then on the seventh day, they march around one time. And then on the seventh day, they march around the city this town for seven times. And on the last time around, they were told, blow your trumpets, and the walls will come tumbling down. You look at that and you say, wait a minute, you know, come on, how can marching around a city cause the walls to fall down? And especially, you know, seven times. Why seven times? And then why blow the trumpets at the end of this whole event? Well, because God was making a point, and everything is done with a purpose in, you know, of course, in the mind of God. And so the purpose, he's showing us an event that is going to take place in the future that is not taken place yet. And we have this thing repeated in Scripture called the last trump. On the last trump, this is going to happen on the last trump. You know, things are going to come to an end on the last trump. So here you have a story, not a story, but a historical record of Jericho being, you know, being overrun by the Israelites. This big walled city that, you know, you couldn't penetrate because the walls were so thick. These walls come tumbling down, not from the outside in, but from the inside out. Saying that, hey, this had to be a miraculous type of event, and obviously somebody was helping the Israelites. But why the seven, you know, why the seven times walking around, and then on the seventh day, the seven, another seven times walking around, and then you have the final trump. So you look at these things, or at least I look at these things in the Bible and say, hey, wait a minute, that yes, that's an interesting, unusual way of doing business, but indeed it's a sign to say this is what's going to happen at the end times. You know, perhaps. And indeed, you get to Revelation and you've got the seven of the sevens of the sevens. You've got the, you know, you've got the seven seals and you've got the seven bowls of wrath and you've got the seven trumpets, you know, kind of being being repeated. And so it's nothing is a coincidence and nothing is there by chance.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, interesting. Well, we started talking about, and until I led Don astray there, talking about an article over at the Institute for Creation Research. We'll have a link to that. In fact, I think what I'll do, if you'd like to read this, this has to do with the Big Bang, and doesn't even say theory. It's nice that it does not concede that. It just says science confronts the Big Bang, and it has to do with the recent discoveries that seem to contradict what typically has been received or thought of or positioned as the Big Bang theory. And I think I just got that link in the chat window now. You can read the article. We'll also have the link in the podcast of our conversation in a couple of hours up on the website at brokenroadradio.com. So, Don, this is all fascinating stuff, and I know we've covered much of this ground before, but it just it's so interesting. It never gets old. And the real mystery is how it is that science and humanism are so inextricably linked. It's as if we can't admit there's a God. We can't admit there's a designer, because then it would be admitting that we don't have control of this thing.
Well, that's right. And that's the ultimate goal, of course, of saying that, you know, we want to make ourselves into little gods, and mm-hmm. we can't make ourselves into little gods if there is a big God out there that is over everything. And so we got to do away with the big God, much like Satan, Lucifer wanted to do. He said, he gave five, he had five reasons why he should be worshipped in, Isaiah 14. And, he said, I will be above the Most High. Finally, he's going to be above the mountains and everything, the creation, and then he was going to be above the congregation, he was going to be above the peoples and the angels, and finally he says, I'm going to be like the Most High God, mm-hmm. making himself out to be God, because that's mm-hmm. what he wanted to be. And that theme continues to rise up in our history, and even today, where, you know, people or people groups want to be a God. And so as that theme continues to rise, we've got to do away with God, mm-hmm. because if we have a God, then I can't be a little God. And so it really boils down to pride, mm-hmm. because if you're a very prideful person, you can't have anybody else be above you.
I think it's more than pride, though. I think there's a kind of a visceral fear here, too, that if we don't know about it, don't understand it, we can't control it, then neither can we predict what it will do. And that leaves us kind of out in limbo. If we've got the Bible, if we've got the story right there in front of us, it would be... and I think that's why the Bible and Christianity has been such a boon to mankind for these many centuries now, because it provides answers and provides direction and provides assurance that God loves us, and that he's there for our good and not for our ill. And to think that's slipping from our grasp now scares me, that there's nothing to replace it. Nothing.
Well, absolutely. And that void then creates chaos.
Hmm.
And that chaos then creates destruction. And then we have the battle for who's going to be on top again. Mm-hmm. So whenever a society eliminates or tries to eliminate God from their, from their government, from their thinking, from their schools, from their life, chaos soon, follows. And out of that, people are oppressed, and you know, it's as if the Old Testament is replaying itself over and over and over again, because mm-hmm. we know, okay, the Israelites received, you know, the Ten Commandments, and they received the Levitical laws, and as long as they worshiped God and obeyed his commandments, things were fine. They were at peace. But as soon as they forgot the laws and didn't read the scriptures anymore, and that wasn't, you know, the laws weren't placed in front of them as a remembrance, then the society degraded, and pretty soon their enemies that, you know, camped all around them and took their land, just as God said they would. And then they cry out to God because, please help us. You know, we now remember you, and we now remember the peace that we were in when we were worshiping you and obeying your laws. And so God, you know, rescues them, and they have victory over their enemies, and that lasts a little while, and then the whole process starts over again. It's, you know, this little thing that happened to Israelites over and over and over again is happening to our societies all around the world, and it's happening here, unfortunately, in the United States, as we forget God, mm-hmm. as we put him on the back shelf, and we say, no, you can't bring your Bible to school, and no, we can't have the Ten Commandments in the courtroom, because, you know, that might offend somebody. Mm-hmm. Offend somebody, you know, how can, you know, thou shalt not kill, you know, how can that offend somebody, and especially in a courtroom where you're trying to decide whether or not this murderer is a murderer, or whether or not this was an accident. Mm. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Interesting. Enjoy this discussion. Thank you very much, Don, for spending so much time with us again this morning. We check in with Don about every Tuesday morning here along the Broken Road, and just delight in what he brings us. Don, back to the vineyard now, huh? How's weather down in Garden Valley, Texas?
Well, it's a little cool. Actually, we had a bunch of rain over the weekend, okay. And that brought our 70-degree weather down to 50 degrees.
So. Yeah, well, I think that's part of the big system.
It's a little cooler.
Yeah, you know, the whole center of the country is a little wet, a little damp, a little cool, and parts of us are turning white today.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice. We have we don't have anything white on the ground, but
okay.
Well, it's that we haven't had any freezes yet, so we're expecting those probably in January or February.
Okay. Well, listen, will you be available to us next week? It's Christmas week next week, so personal schedules can get in the way, but we'll look forward to you next Tuesday.
Okay. I think I should be able to make some time. I've got some family coming in, but... Okay. We should be able to do this next week. If not, we'll communicate back and forth and see if we can come up with a topic.
We'll look forward to that. Dr. Don Clark, biochemist, member of the board at Creation Moments, also want to suggest to you that you visit the Creation Moments website, creationmoments.com, and you'll find all kinds of scientific evidence for young Earth creation. And if you look at it unemotionally, if you look at it scientifically, rationally, you can learn a whole lot at creationmoments.com. Don, have a great week. We'll see you. Bye.
Okay, so long. You too.